Welcome to Law You Should Know. The law affects every aspect of our lives, our home, our jobs, and our recreational activities. Now you can learn about the law and how to protect yourself against the loss of your liberty or property. Learn how to stand up for your rights and seek compensation when you have been wronged. Your host for Law You Should Know is attorney Kenneth J. Landau with the Mineola Law Firm of Shane, Dox, Denise, and Corker. He's a member of the Committee on Professional Ethics of the Bar Association of Nassau County and counsel to the Nassau Academy of Law. And now, here is your host for Law You Should Know, attorney Kenneth J. Landau.
Hi, this is Ken Landau, and welcome to Law You Should Know. Today we're going to talk about a special topic, preventing bullying and bullying and the law. And my special guest is Lorna Blumen, and she's an educational consultant, a lecturer, and an author about the topic of bullying. And one of her books is The Bullying Epidemic. Lorna, welcome to Law You Should Know.
Hi, Ken.
I know that you're passionate and zealous in educating the general public about bullying, why it's something that has to be addressed, and giving best practices for dealing with it. How did you first become involved in your war on bullying?
Well, I really became interested as a parent. I have a daughter who's 22. And when she was young, I sat on the board of directors of a parent education community service agency. And I began to see there was a real need to teach kids conflict resolution skills. That's really where I started off. And I thought, why do we always wait until the kids are big and the problems are big? Why don't we start when both are small? So I started teaching. We designed a drama class and started teaching it in the schools to kids with the conflict skills hidden inside. The more I did that, two things happened. One is I realized I actually needed to be working more with the adults who work with kids, because no matter what I did, what was important was what happened the other 364 days of the year or 51 weeks of the year. And then the more I worked with the adults who work with kids, teachers, coaches, parents, guidance counselors, et cetera, the more bullying kept coming up, and people kept asking, but what do I do about bullying? So little by little, I started adding in bullying to my training sessions, and eventually it just took over everything, really and truly, I'm sorry to say.
And so it's really partly conflict resolution and teaching people to solve problems as children, which a lesson they might carry with them into adulthood.
Very much so, but there are some key differences between conflict and bullying that people often get wrong. And one of the mistakes that we make in trying to solve bullying problems is trying to apply conflict resolution skills to that. But many problems start off small, and many times when the power is equal between people, at least in the long term, those problems can be solved using conflict resolution skills.
And you're saying it's not strictly a conflict because there's a target, there's really a victim and a bully, it's not a level playing field?
That's correct. That is the defining difference. In bullying, there is always a one-way power imbalance. The bully always has the power, and the target never has the power, and the roles never reverse. Whereas in conflict, today I might have the power and you don't, but the roles can reverse sometime later on. And that's the power differential is the defining characteristic of bullying, in addition to the bully deliberately using that power and aggression towards the target with the intent to hurt, cause hurt and fear, and both today and the threat that it will recur.
So it's not that it takes two to have a fight. It just takes one aggressor and one victim to have a bullying situation.
That's correct.
And do the adults, the teachers, the coaches tolerate or enable the bullying?
Yes, they do. Many times they don't really get the difference between bullying and conflict, number one. So just to talk about that for a second, when you hear, oh, we let the kids work it out for themselves, that's a big clue that the adults don't understand the difference, because we let the kids work it out for themselves only works in situations of conflict, and that only works once you've really done a lot of repetitive training with the kids to help them identify the many options. With bullying, where one kid is always on the receiving end and one kid is always the powerful aggressor, it is absolutely the wrong solution to let the kids work it out for themselves. The other thing is, even when adults recognize that it's bullying, adults really tend to look the other way or not intervene effectively until very, very late in the game. That's why we've seen so many horrible stories of kids who've been so distraught that they've given up and committed suicide. We had a big case in Canada recently with a child named Amanda Todd who had been bullied for 2 years, both online and in person, some of it really rising to the level of assault. This child was screaming for help on the internet, as well as by acting out with, you know, suicidal attempts, and she didn't receive enough help, and eventually she committed suicide.
And I think those things are occurring frequently all over the United States. Now, on the flip side of that, if unfortunately the victim doesn't commit suicide, the victim may retaliate, and probably Columbine is something that occurred there.
That's exactly right. In fact, those two cases, or those two stories, are almost the same. It's just the difference between some kids act out, and that's Columbine. Those were kids who were on the receiving end of taunting for years, called losers and loners and friendless, and food thrown on them at the cafeteria, feces thrown on them. I mean, there's a limit to the amount of humiliation the kids can take before they snap. Then for kids who perhaps have a gentler personality, they tend to act in rather than act out, and those are the situations where you see self-harm that may not, you know, be as final as suicide, but there's lots of self-harm that happens in these kids long before the point where it reaches suicide.
And also there's just general withdrawal, and it's almost like post-traumatic stress.
It is very much like post-traumatic stress. In fact, the recent research is showing that the brains of children who are bullied targets are damaged. They look like the brains of children who are abused and neglected.
And, you know, just like you said, the kids will work it out. It's also like that saying, boys will be boys.
That's exactly right. That's an old-fashioned.
So this can take place among girls, boys, and does it cross all social and economic lines as well?
Yes, pretty much. And unfortunately, the story is also very much the case with adults. There are different ways of bullying. You know, there are physical ways of bullying. There are verbal ways of bullying. Social ways or relational ways of bullying, and of course now with the internet there's cyberbullying, which is really a subset of relational bullying, but because of the additional complexities and options, it's sort of considered in its own category.
Now there's another group here, there's the bystanders, and I guess people also like parents, but do you believe that bystanders can and should intervene in some way?
I do. I'll tell you, we have all played all three roles. We have all been bullies, we have all been targets, but mostly we have been bystanders. And in children's bullying, bystanders can be children or they can be adults. Now, the interesting thing about bullying is that the real power rests with the bystanders, because the research shows that when bystanders step in, bullying stops in seconds. Now, in today's environment, oftentimes, you know, schools or the community are really unsafe. I don't suggest that a single courageous child stand up and go, excuse me, we don't treat people that way here. But ultimately, that's really our goal. Our goal is that at the first sign that someone crosses the line, one kid can go, hey, you crossed the line. We don't treat people that way here. And the kid who's crossed the line says, oh, sorry, I didn't realize it. You know, they say it in kid language. But
can that kid also, or that, let's say, adult, try to get the victim to a safe place and at least try to, you know, end the bullying session?
Absolutely. And, in fact, what I suggest in these days, until a single person can stand up without endangering him or herself, we need to teach groups of kids, the whole class, all the kids on the playground, grade three kids, to take care of one another. So when they see someone making a mistake and stepping over the line, and honestly, we all have, that they stand up as a group and go, hey, you've crossed the line. You come play with us until he gets himself back together. And then you say to the bully, hey, when you're ready, take a few minutes, calm yourself down. But when you're ready, come back, because we are still friends with you. You just crossed the line.
So it's important to sort of loud and clear to try to distract the bully.
Yes, distract the bully, but honestly, it should be fairly easy in theory to if you stop early enough that the bully will stop to say, hey, you've crossed the line. That should be all the warning that anybody needs. Okay,
or even something to say you cannot do it here, or
absolutely.
Know,
Absolutely. That's about the other aspect. There are two aspects to the real solution to bullying is prevention and early, consistent, effective intervention. So the early intervention is at the first sign someone's crossed the line. The preventive part, the purely preventive part, is when you talk about it in groups before, you know, before a bullying situation has happened, where adults particularly use their guidance and their leadership to set out the expectations for not just in theory that we take care of each other, but to show what that looks like. Because as kids are young, until their brains have developed a certain ability to do abstract thinking, they really need those concrete examples. I've had so many teachers say to me, I no sooner got done teaching that lesson on bullying that's in the curriculum, and I turn around and I look at my kids out on the playground, and there they are bullying a special needs kid, or, you know, it happens.
So let's say in a playground situation, whether the victim is a special needs kid or someone else, intervention, timely, prompt intervention is important.
Absolutely. It's crucial.
And what about in like a college setting where there's hazing rights and initiation rights? Are these a form of bullying?
Yes, I think they're bullying really taken to almost its furthest possible extreme. And I'll tell you, the problem with kids in college is that if they arrive at college without enough of an ingrained sense of where the limits are, then when you stick them together in a dorm of 300 kids or several thousand kids with very minimal adult supervision, it will not get better, okay? And that is, for example, I'm sure you're familiar with the Tyler Clementi case where, you know, he was videotaped in his first month at Rutgers. He was videotaped by his roommate having sex in the privacy of his own room, and then the roommate posted it to the internet. And Tyler was so distraught at having been outed this way that he jumped off the GW bridge and killed himself by the end of September. So this is a kid, the kid who videotaped him, who frankly arrived at college unprepared to practice those behavioral boundaries, that there are plenty of times in life that we have the opportunity to make the wrong decision or to do the wrong thing.
And you know what I thought interesting in that case, that none of the bullier's friends said to them, this is not a good idea, you
That's
should not
right.
be doing this.
That's exactly right. Someone has to speak up. Really.
And he confided in so many people that he was doing it, right or wrong, whatever he was doing, but no one said to him, this is going too far. You shouldn't be doing this.
That's exactly right. And there is a certain amount of, you know, group lowest common denominator behavior that takes over. But once again, if kids arrive at school with a better sense of, you know, there are many times in life that in your mind you say, I have the knowledge and the ability to videotape my roommate and post it to the internet. But your next thought has to be, but I would never do that because it's the wrong thing to do and it would hurt someone.
And it also may come back to haunt you. Lorna, we're going to have to take a short break now. We're talking to Lorna Blumen, who's an advocate, an educational consultant, an author who's written Bullying Epidemic, and we'll be continuing our conversation about bullying, its importance in prevention, and bullying in the law. You're listening to Law You Should Know here on 90.3 WHPC, the voice of Nassau Community College in Garden City, Long Island, New York, also broadcasting over the Internet at ncc.edu/WHPC, and for free download podcast, go to itunes.ncc.edu/WHPC. We'll be back in a moment.
Hi, we want to tell you about a program with real appeal. There is a high-quality, low-cost paralegal studies program right here at Nassau Community College.
It can be your major while earning your associate's degree,
or taken as a certificate program if you already have a 2 or 4 year college degree.
It can be the start of your legal career or a great second career.
It is also a great credential in the business world.
Many of our paralegal graduates go on to 4 year colleges and even law school.
You can complete the certificate program in several months. Paralegals work in private law firms, government, and corporations on Long Island and New York City.
You can start in the summer, fall, and winter, attend full or part-time, days, nights, or weekends.
Our tuition is low, and the program is approved by the American Bar Association.
For more information, contact the paralegal program at 516-572-7774 or email us at paralegal@ncc.edu.
once again, we continue with Law You Should Know. From the Mineola Law Firm of Shane, Docs, Denise, Corker, and Sauer, here is attorney Kenneth J. Landau.
Hi, this is Ken Landau, and welcome back to Law You Should Know. We're talking about preventing bullying and bullying and the law, and our special guest is Lorna Blumen. She's an educational consultant and also an advocate in bullying prevention and the author of several books. One is called Bullying Epidemic. Lorna, I know you have some websites with valuable information and resources available to the public. Why don't you just take a moment and give our audience the websites?
Sure. We have three websites. One is and blogs. One is bullyingepidemic.com, named after the book. Let's see. And there is lots of free downloadable information on that, and feel free to contribute to that as well. There's another website, lornablumen.com, L-O-R-N-A, B as in boy, L-U-M-E-N.com, and that's specifically about me and my professional work. And then there's another website called girlsrespectgroups.com. Girls and groups are plural. It's about our after-school program that we developed for middle school girls led by specially trained high school girls, and it's used in the U.S., in Canada, and in 30 countries worldwide.
If someone is being bullied, is there any behaviors or best practices that you can teach the victim?
Yes, there are. It's very individual because kids are bullied for a variety of different reasons. But as adults, we can do much more to recognize when kids need some support. So, for example, kids need to know how to have friendships, make friends. They need sometimes some help, some support in social skills, how to enter a group, how to break the ice, how to, you know, when there are two kids hanging out, how to be the third one that enters. Certainly the pieces about learning how to not put yourself in vulnerable positions, that's certainly good safety training for all kids and victim prevention in general. Also for kids who perhaps have, who are shy kids or more introverted, those are kids who tend not to be embedded well in the school culture. So helping those children make other friends is a big protective effect against bullying. Similarly, kids who are new to the environment, new to the school, new to the country, new to the neighborhood, those are all kids who are at risk for being bullied. Bullies look for any way to carve you out from the crowd, identify a way in which you are different from the crowd, and that makes it easier for them to send the message, you don't belong to us. But honestly,
especially
if they're alone. So, for example, for a child who is being targeted, one coping strategy is to make sure that you don't go out on the playground alone. Let me say this, though. Even though we're talking about coping strategies for kids who might be at risk of being targets, the burden of responsibility for protecting these kids belongs with the adults and the peers. Okay, so it is not a target's fault, and it is not their responsibility to solve that problem. On the other hand, we all need to recognize areas where we need to improve our strengths, improve our vulnerabilities, and learn better skills, too.
And when you say peers, you're talking about the peers of the bully.
I am. I'm talking about all the peers of those kids, the peers in that school community, that if you see someone being bullied, you need to not stand by. You need to stand up. And if you
have some influence over the bully, you should stand up, too, and tell them that it's not appropriate and to step back and relax.
Absolutely, because the bully is looking for power. The best thing we can do is take that power away. So if everyone says, hey, that's really uncool what you're doing, that's like the last thing the bully wants to hear. The more we make it uncool to bully, but in a way that's not bullying the bully either, because that's no better.
But you're actually helping them because you're helping the situation, you're keeping it from escalating to a point of no return.
That's right. And the other thing for bullies to remember is bullies often bully because they are looking for power inappropriately, often because they feel powerless in some other environment in their life. And it's not an excuse, but it's a helpful understanding point that helps us start to solve the problem. So the last thing you really want to do with a bully is humiliate them, because that's going to make them want even more power, feel more embarrassed, more powerless.
You're talking about like a positive intervention.
I am really. And if you intervene early, it is always possible to make a positive intervention. If we wait too late, then honestly, almost any kind of intervention is too late, even intervening with, you know, with police, with lawyers, with, you know, the resources, the mental health system, the much more sophisticated resources.
And by the same token, early intervention is best for the victim, whether they're heading towards suicide or they're heading toward revenge.
Absolutely. And there have also been studies shown that being a target, it becomes habituated in the target. So there is a certain amount of saying once a target, a certain amount of truth in the saying once a target, always a target. So we need to change that. And honestly, the damage, the emotional damage to these kids who are targeted is very substantial, and we are just beginning to really understand.
If it continues undeterred over a long time.
Yes. Honestly, though, even a single incident can be horrifying. You know, for a kid who comes to school and is beaten up, or the risk that they're going to be beaten up, they know there are plans to jump them later in the day. For a kid who has her gym clothes thrown in the toilet and urinated on, honestly, it doesn't have to happen twice. Those are intensely aggressive acts that make a kid fear. Every day when they put their hand on the school door to go back in, they have that whole cascade of fear chemicals in their body. Really, it is PTSD.
We only have a few minutes left in the show, but the media influences that these kids are subject to, and perhaps grown-ups, is bullying glorified in movies and on TV?
It's glorified everywhere. Think about every reality show you have ever seen. I'll just talk about a couple. Donald Trump stands, you know, 12 people up and bellows, "You're fired," to one of them in front of their peers. You and I are old enough, we have enough life and work experience to be able to look at that and go, "Oh, I would never want to work for a Donald Trump." Our kids do not have the kind of life and work experience that allows them to discern that.
For better or worse, millions of adults like him and want to buy his products.
At a certain point, we are teaching our kids to accept being being bullied targets and aspiring to become bullies, because they view on those shows that the bully becomes the boss.
And also, what about in the workplace? I mean, bullying, sometimes there are laws, at least in the United States, that may tend to take, you know, to prevent it, but is bullying more rampant in the workplace?
Oh, bullying is very rampant in the workplace, and it is bad for many, many reasons. Obviously, it's bad for the adults who are suffering from workplace bullying, and just like in the schools, if you're a bystander, you are suffering too, because if you have to protect yourself and worry that you're going to be the next, believe me, you're not doing your best at school or at work, and again, those are the stress symptoms that over time debilitate people, really and truly.
And what about on the road? Do we see more road rage and tailgating? Is
sure,
that
absolutely. It's a perfect example of lack of self-discipline and lack of self-control. Mistakes are going to get made. Sometimes I'm the person who makes the mistake, sometimes you are. But just because I see someone make a mistake in front of me, that does not give me license to have an emotional meltdown, chase them off the exit, and come after them with a weapon.
And also to just be aggressive in driving in general.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, that's the other, you know, you raise an interesting point, because a lot of that is reflective of the level of stress under which we're all living. And if we are living our lives at the edge of our ability to handle our stress, it makes it so much easier to flip over into being a bully without actually realizing or intending it. So we need to do a better job on stress control and teach our kids that too.
Wait. Now, you mentioned in your book sports. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that's something that prevents bullying, that encourages bullying, or both?
It does both. It's very interesting. I think learning how to work together in a team is a fantastic opportunity. I think competition is great. I think team sports are wonderful. I think physical interaction and mental interaction between kids is really important. But we need to be able to find a balance. We need to do a better job spending as much effort emotionally coaching our kids as much as we do teaching them to play by the playbook and learn the whole playbook.
And this is also within teams and between teams.
That is correct. The other team needs to not be viewed as obstacles. The other team is full of human beings. And, you know, so if you might beat them this week, but you better hope that next week when you see them, or next, you know, next month when you see them, that, you know, if they beat you, that they're not inhumane to you. The other aspect of sports is coaching. And adult coaches need to do a better job of toning down the belligerence in coaching, too.
I just wanted to go back to the beginning, and I know we just need a quick answer because our time is limited.
Mm-hmm.
How can someone tell whether a child is being bullied, and perhaps some intervention will be helpful?
You can ask. Children sometimes don't want to talk about it. You can look for symptoms. Are they exhibiting stomach aches that they never want to go to school? School avoidance symptoms. Are they experiencing any of the obvious symptoms like bruises, missing backpacks, missing lunch, money, torn clothing, that kind of stuff?
But even if there's something going on in the street, you can say, are you okay? Is everything okay? Kind of call like a timeout.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, if a child doesn't want to talk to you about it right then, at least what you're doing is opening a window of opportunity. Kids hate coming to adults telling them, I need your help.
And you may be stopping a bullying episode.
Absolutely, absolutely.
We just have a moment to give you to summarize on what your best practices are concerning bullying.
Sure. I'll say that there are three main things. One is, focus on prevention, less on the laws. And in terms of prevention, we need to do a better job building respect, for keeping kids grounded in respect for self and others. We need to intervene early at the earliest signs of bullying. Don't wait. We need to expect mistakes and treat kids and ourselves with respect even when they make mistakes. We also have to take responsibility as adults for cleaning up our own behavior. And then, you know, some of the legal specialists who might be listening to the program, they have an opportunity to mandate preventive efforts as well as punishment. And I think that's a unique opportunity.
Okay. And for all the reasons you mentioned, bullying needs to be everyone's concern.
Absolutely.
Okay. I wish we had some more time, but I'd like to thank our guest, Lorna Blumen. And you've heard she has a website, bullyingepidemic.com, with a lot of valuable information. She's also the author of the book, Bullying Epidemic, along with other books. And she's been talking to us about why it's so important to prevent bullying and to intervene. You're listening to Law You Should Know here on 90.3 WHPC, the voice of Massacuny College in Garden City, New York, and you also streaming at nbc.edu/WHPC, and free downloads of this program and many others on the station are available at itunes.ncc.edu/WHPC. Please join us next week at this same time for another program on Law You Should Know.